and a very warm welcome to episode 26 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Now, number 26 symbolizes struggle, which is rather relevant given the fact that I'm joined by my dear friends, Eric, the producer, and JC. And JC is wearing a t-shirt that reminds me of one of the greatest struggles of my life. Welcome to the show, boys. JC, did you have to wear that t-shirt?
Gouldy, I'm going to show up for anyone who's watching on our YouTube. You would think this was innocuous. Southwest, just a, you know, commuter airline. But this was the shirt. This is a totem in our relationship, Gouldy. This is the shirt that I won from our Dizzy Bat race way back when. I still own it. It still fits me. And that was a long
2008.
Time ago. 2008. There are all these just things that you make up.
This is the point of the show. We're at this reminder of viewers. Oh, by the way, we used to have a TV show on Channel 5 years ago. If you completely missed what the hell we're talking about,
Johnny will explain.
So hopefully in 30 seconds.
Cue the waffle.
I will explain. As you quite rightly say, we used to do a TV show for Channel 5 back in the day. And in 2008, we went on the greatest road trip of our lives. And we ended up at Round Rock, the minor league of the Houston Astros. Is that right?
Triple A affiliate. Yeah.
Triple A affiliate. And they asked Josh and I in the seventh inning stretch to do the Dizzy Bat Race. And the winner got the t-shirt that Josh is wearing. Which,
and let's just stay to the facts. Let's stay to the facts, Gouldy, which is I won,
so,
end of
story.
For those
who don't know how a Dizzy Bat Race works, you start with your head on a baseball and you have to go around it loads of times. Well, if you watch the TV coverage, Josh went around about 5 times. I went around about 50. Needless to say, I was the one suffering from more dizziness than Josh, who had clearly abused the rules. Josh then runs full pelt into me, grabs me, pulls me to the ground, squashes my face into the ground, draws blood, runs off and wins the race. I call for a steward's inquiry. No one cares. We put it to the vote with the listeners and the viewers of Channel 5 Baseball, and they all agreed, well, not all of them, but the majority agreed that I was taken out illegally and that t-shirt should be mine.
Okay, that's enough. But
moving on.
That was definitely...
What were you talking about, 26 and hanging on by a slender thread, Gouldy?
Biblical reference time. That's how much of a thread we're hanging on by. When the number 26 appears in your life, it reminds you to have faith that you will always be provided for by the universe. Well, clearly, I wasn't provided for on that day in the Dizzy Bat Race. So that's a load of old tosh. Let's move on. Notable number 26. There have only been 4 26 that have been retired, boys. You will, of course, know. Gene Autry, Angels, 82. Billy Williams, Cubs, 87. Johnny Oates, the Rangers, 2005. And my personal favorite, Wade Boggs, Red Sox, 216. Even though he won the World Series, I believe, with the Yankees.
The interesting one, though, is Gene Autry, right, who was the owner, famous, Western star who went on to own the Angels. Eric, why don't you tell us why 26 is his number? Because I remember him wearing
that. Why do you see the number 26 in Autry hanging as a retired number at Angels games? Well, Gene Autry has the singer, the actor, the country, star. Owned the Angels, huge baseball fan, and he actually was always called the 26th man, in a 25-man roster. He was a 26th man. Like here in football, they'll say, be the 12th man. He was the 26th man for the Angels, and when he passed away, they decided, okay, let's retire number 26, because Gene Autry made this organization, made it what it is, and that's why you see 26 as a retired number.
Don't get me wrong. That's great, and I love Gene Autry, but that doesn't compare in terms of entertainment value as Wade Boggs. This is a man who wasn't just a phenomenal baseball player. This is a man who appeared in Cheers, in The Simpsons. This is a man who made an appearance for the professional wrestling promotion, World Wrestling Federation, the WWF, in 1992.
Okay, moving on.
Oh, the bell is here. Thank God for that.
Yeah. Thank God you got
Bells and Waffles. That should be the new name of the show. Bells and Waffles.
Bells and Waffle. I like that. They always say that a name of a podcast, the more sort of bizarre, the more it attracts attention.
And
maybe that'll work for us, boys. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we are moving on, and we need to do a quick COVID update. I've checked my fantasy baseball teams. As you know, I've got loads and loads of them. I can't see a single player on the COVID ILs. So I'm assuming things are pretty good in the major leagues. Is that right?
Vaccination, it's still up in the air as far as who's vaxxed and who isn't. But meanwhile, north of the border, yes, this is where you say Canadian border, Eric.
Yeah, yeah, well, you just went straight into the link, so I felt that I didn't need to. Right. I let you get on with it.
Well, in Canada, the Toronto Blue Jays, who have been sort of hovering with the keeping it restricted to 15, 16,000 capacity at the Sky Dome, now called the Rogers Centre, they're now going to double the numbers for the last week of the season and for what hopefully will be a postseason for Toronto, to 30,000. So there'll be 30,000 packed house in Toronto from now, potentially in the playoffs.
Playoffs that they may not actually make.
Yeah.
Correct. More on that later.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Okay. Well, thank you for that, buddy. Right. Well, obviously, for everybody out there, don't forget, we want you to big us up on social media. So if you can see the buttons at the bottom, subscribe, hit the like, you know what to do. We're across all mediums, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it, YouTube, if you want to see our ugly mugs. Before we finish off this opening section, though, Eric, what's our trivia question of the day?
Our trivia will be linked with, you know, we've been saying, well, Miguel Cabrera. Yeah, I'm always using him as sort of a segue into the trivia questions, haven't I? Now, he went the other day, 3 for 4 with 4 RBIs. And here we are going, well, he's old. You know, he's 38. This is, you know, the end of his career. It's sad to see such an old chunk of flesh like that still out in the field. But hey, every now and then, he surprised me. 3 for 4 the other day. And 4 RBIs, not bad for an old man, but, you know, 38 is, you can't really say that's old, right? And doing a bit of research, I was saying, well, you know, 4 RBIs for a 38-year-old in one game is very impressive, but my question to you is, who is, in the history of Major League Baseball, the oldest player to get an RBI in a Major League Baseball game?
Wow.
Okay. Was it A, Bartolo Colon? Was it B, Jamie Moyer? Or is it C, Tommy John? Yes, that Tommy John of surgical procedure fame. Now, here's the irony. They're all pitchers. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
So you think that'd be a position player, but no. One of those players has a record for being the oldest player to get an RBI in a Major League Baseball game.
And I'm just happy you didn't add... You didn't add Minnie Minoso to that list, because I probably would have bit on Minnie Minoso, who was the oldest player, got to play with the White Sox in the 70s. He played in like the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s in Major League games.
Well, there you go.
But he didn't get an RBI, clearly. He's not on your list.
He's on my list. Yeah. So then, moving on.
Okay, guys, we're moving to the leadoff batter of the day, as traditionally now the news roundup. So here we go. Here's the news roundup. Well, first story is obviously the clinchers. So far, quite a few teams have put their names down for the postseason. The White Sox, the Rays, the Brewers, the Giants, the Dodgers. Getting close to the others, and what a race it is. I think probably the NL East is the most exciting. Would you agree with that, Josh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just amazing how a couple of teams have stuck with it and still are remaining in the hunt for that. I think what's interesting about teams that clinch early is it's such a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you can align your pitching rotation very nicely for the postseason, so you can have the pitchers where you want them to be, give some rest to players, but you lose a little bit of that edge. So if you get in there and you end up in the one game sort of playoff, it's not so good. So, you know, winning the division, being able to get into the longer series, you have to really balance that. And I think that's the difficult part about the early clinch.
But lucky for the Dodgers, the Giants, they're still in a race out there in the West. Here's one stat, though, for you guys. I just want to focus on the East. Just one moment. This when I looked into this afternoon, it stunned me. So the Atlanta Braves don't have the greatest record considering they win they're leading the division. 532 is their winning percentage. And yet, of the 72 losses they've recorded this season, you're not going to believe this. 46 of the 72 were one or two run games. And 29 of that 46 were one run losses. So they've been unbelievably close in so many games to winning. You compare that to anybody else, I can guarantee you they're nowhere near. So,
But that's not a positive sign, Gouldy. That's a negative sign, right?
No, absolutely. It depends on how you see it, but I agree that they're in those clutch situations, they're not delivering. I agree, that's a negative. But on the positive side is they don't need to improve an awful lot to win games that they were losing prior.
It's such a mental part of the game to lose by a run. I'll tell you, you know, that you can't push it across that often. It starts getting in your head that when you get close, I think there's a big psychological element to that, and one to watch that they have to get over.
Yeah. And just as a matter of interest, what is your tip out there in the West? Because it just never ceases to amaze me that the Giants continue to hold off the juggernaut that is the Dodgers. They lead by two in the division. They got a 6.52 winning percentage. It's the best winning percentage in the National League. In fact, it's probably the best in the whole of the major leagues, isn't it? Yes, it is, by quite some margin. I mean, what a season.
I mean, again, the West is nothing how we expected it. We expected the Padres to be there battling the Dodgers, and here the Giants have had one of the most enjoyable and fascinating seasons we've seen in a long time. I've said it before, and I hate to be a broken record, and it feels like I'm just on the easy side on this, but I do think the Dodgers, whether they prevail in the regular season, they're the better team for postseason.
But do you not think, and this is really key with regards to postseason possibilities elsewhere, do you not think if the Giants can hold on and win that division, and they're two games ahead with week to go in the regular season, then the Dodgers are in a one-game wildcard playoff, and we all know how dangerous and how much of a crapshoot that is, and that could be a problem, particularly since they're obviously going to be face off against the Cards, who are in a 15-game win streak.
Well, I mean, two things to that. One is, I think the Dodgers have already announced that Max Scherzer would be the pitcher for the one game, and if you're going to have a one game situation this season, and particularly how Scherzer's pitches came over the Dodgers, that's what you want. And I know we're going to talk more about the Cards, but you know, I would almost get worried when you get this far along in a winning streak, because it's bound to end and there's bound to be a hangover from that. And yeah. I just wonder whether some point this week they're going to hit a little bit of a speed bump, and then all of a sudden they're going to not be the team that they have been, because the momentum will slow very quickly.
Okay, well, let's move into that then, because I've just mentioned the Cards, and obviously at the moment they seem unstoppable. 15 games in a row. Eric, am I right in saying that's a franchise record?
It's a franchise record, and at the time of this recording, is currently 1-1 for the Cardinals in their game in the fourth inning. So it could be potential by the end of this show being recorded, they could be on a 16-game win streak and just extend that record. It's ridiculous.
Been amazing, if you followed those games, I mean, there've been a lot of late inning heroics, a lot of comebacks. I mean, they've been the definition of gritty during this run, but you look at the rotation, and I just, can John Lester continue to be valuable? Wainwright hasn't been quite as good recently. He's had a couple starts that aren't quite as good. You're relying on J.A. Happ. I think this is just fantastic to watch and wonderful right at the end of the season, but I'm not convinced that they can carry that over into the postseason.
I 100% agree, but it never ceases to amaze me that the Cardinals just seem to get the job done when it comes to making the postseason, whether it's being successful in the postseason. Their ability to just do enough to make it is you know, slightly annoying, if I'm brutally honest, as a Braves fan, but also incredibly impressive.
Dan, just to add on to these clinchers and all the teams are eliminated at the moment, my prediction of a Bay Area World Series is looking unlikely, but still not impossible, might I add. And my thing about the Cincinnati Reds being a pleasant surprise and potentially getting to the playoffs, very unlikely, but not impossible, might I add as well. Thank you very much.
But you know what, Eric? I do tip my hat to you, because you go on the ledge more than the rest of us. Like, you really do go out there, and I mean, you're wrong, you fall off the ledge, you crash into the rocks below, but you get there, and there's a lot of respect for that, my man.
Well, thank you.
Well, the Reds are six games back from the Cards in the wild card, which, given the fact that I think there's only seven games left, I think their error mark is two, so I think we can say
not impossible.
It's not impossible, but they're pretty much out of the running. As for Oakland, for your other tip, they are four games out, and they've got two teams above them. Toronto and Seattle are ahead of them. So, yeah. So, again, it's not mathematically impossible.
And we haven't talked about Seattle making a run, too, to get into the picture, at least. You know, they were very frustrated with some of the trades at the trading deadline. I know some of the players were. And you wonder if they had have been more aggressive, more buy instead of sort of a bit buy, a bit sell, maybe they would have been even a little closer.
Does that bode well for next season for Seattle Mariner fans?
I think so. I mean, I think that they do have some young talent there. I think that it's a nice mixture of skill there. you know, the West, it's really about Houston for the most part. Everything kind of runs through Houston. The team I'm curious about next year are the Angels. What happens with Ohtani? If you could just have an Ohtani and a Trout and go out and get some proper pitching a little bit more, that team just feels like they should be better. And Rendon being healthy.
That's the thing. They shut down Trout for the rest of the season now, by the way. So, yeah.
That's an absolute killer. Killer machine. Okay, well, let's talk about one other side. An interesting story associated with the Blue Jays, who are two games out in the wild card, having made a real charge. They've gone a little bit off the boil. And the Yankees now and Boston sharing the lead in the AL wild card. And there's this great story of the Blue Jays plonking Kevin Kiermaier in their matchup with the Rays. And it was supposedly all about a controversy about they stealing the scouting card. I saw the video footage and how Kevin Kiermaier, I think, he was coming in trying to steal a run from home plate, didn't make it, got tagged out. And in the process, the catcher dropped his scouting card, which he then picked up, put in his pocket, and was filmed sort of handing it over to one of the coaches. He then denied it. I mean, what's this story? Do you know this story, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little ugly. So one thing that's become common in baseball now is the catchers, you'll see them, they'll have a sweatband, and inserted in the sweatband will be either data about the hitters, sort of hot zones, cold zones. Sometimes it'll be information about changing signals. So with a runner on second base, how you're going to change signals. So it's sort of a cheat sheet for them and has some details that can be very valuable if the opposing team gets it. I sort of bought Kiermaier's claim that he keeps a positional chart in his back pocket. I mean, everyone has these cheat sheets now for various reasons. And that after you slid, maybe it comes out and you pick it up. Maybe that's reasonable to believe. It passes the red face test. But he clearly found out pretty quickly what it was. And then the question is, what do you do? I mean, you're a competitor. You're walking to the dugout. Do you turn around and say, hey, I didn't look at this and give it back? Or do you try and use it? Again, in baseball, the mantra has always been, it's not cheating unless you get caught. And so really, if you had called the coach out of the dugout into the walkway to the clubhouse and handed it to him, probably would have gotten away with it. But it was the fact that he got caught that really caused him. And then the second corollary to what I said before is, always worse than the act is the cover-up. So what's annoying about Kiermaier is that he then tried to sort of mealy mouth it a little bit about, oh, I didn't really do anything. Him getting hit, that's the unwritten rules of the game. It's not surprising that happened. He was a bit pissed off about it, but that doesn't surprise me. And the pitcher and the manager ended up getting a suspension. So it seems like justice was meted out across the board.
It's abundantly clear. He goes into the dugout and very surreptitiously sort of hands it over to one of the coaches, which if you didn't know what it was, why would you be doing that? So it's abundantly clear to me he knew exactly.
I think he ultimately admitted that he knew what it was. And then when he got back, you've got the advantage.
100%. Okay, moving on. Another story, one that you're going to be particularly interested in, Eric, and this is the what's been a bit of an ongoing story about the idea of the Rays doing a sort of franchise share and recreating the Expos. Tell us a bit more about this story, buddy.
Well, it's been an ongoing, concept, more like of a flash in the pan idea. More of it is a confirmed thing. But what we do know is that the Tampa Bay Rays, or the management, the ownership, will be putting a sign somewhere behind center field during the playoffs. That they will be sharing games with the city of Montreal. So there'll be a couple of games at the old Olympic Stadium where the Expos used to play, allegedly. And when they sort of hinted about this years ago, the idea was, so what do you call them? The Tampa Bay Montreal X-Rays? See what they did? Clever play of words there? The X-Rays. Yeah, just don't ever call them that, I say. But it's still up in the air. It's still speculation, but it's looking more and more that there will be some. You can't really call it ground sharing, city sharing of split games between Tampa Bay and the city of Montreal.
I mean, JC, the interesting thing about this, I mean, as they stand where they're based, the Rays, I think, have the 27th best attendance attendance record, i.e. a shockingly bad attendance record. And for a team that are almost, it seems, year in, year out, and certainly in recent years, been very successful, went to the World Series last year, you know, that they should be doing better. So you can understand from the team's perspective that if they're not getting the support base that they think they deserve, then they've got to look at other options. But is this yet another one of those ploys to try and just force the hand of their sort of local council in terms of building a new stadium to try and develop their fan base?
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly think the team should be moved. I think they should move the team to Montreal. And I know Eric, myself, and David, we all have connections to Montreal. We all love that city. Eric grew up there. My parents are from there. Dave spent time there. And I really think that that is a better answer. They move that team. Baseball is going to expand. They're going to expand to two cities. So maybe move Tampa somewhere else, put a team to Montreal. But if that doesn't happen, I think, Eric, you're a bit grumpy about this. I think the opportunity to have games in Montreal rather than not have games in Montreal, I get it when it was the other way, it wasn't your town and they were going to Puerto Rico, they're going to San Juan, you're like, oh, I want it all to be in Montreal. But here's an opportunity to flip it the other way and get games in Montreal and at least build up some love for baseball again in the city. Such a great city. Take it. Take the crumbs if that's all you're going to get. I hope that they get a team full stop, but if not, I'll take this.
Eric, just quickly before we close this story out, it's a long time since there's been baseball in Montreal. So remind our listeners, perhaps those that are new to the game, was it a popular sport? Was the attendance, was the fan base passionate?
It was a hard city to you know, especially when hockey is religion in the city of Montreal. For baseball, baseball is always going to be number two to hockey, but it was a strong number two. And when Montreal were great, the stadium was packed. But then, of course, I won't get into the nitty-gritty about the ownership of Jeffrey Loria when he took TV and radio away from the fans. You couldn't listen to or watch televised games of the Expos for a few years because he put such a high price tag on it. Not too unlike the premise of the movie Major League. He just pretty wanted to devalue the team so he can move it, or that was a conspiracy theory. But people, the apathy went pretty fast. You know, when you had an owner who's just constantly sabotaging the team, no one started caring.
And a terrible stadium, too.
And a terrible stadium. The idea was to move into a brand new stadium. The Olympic Stadium was a concrete toilet bowl built in 1976 in a hurry for the Olympics. And it was they put a roof on it. And when you're in Montreal, when it's minus 40 in the winter, in the summer, all you want to do is be outdoors. And to be in a concrete toilet bowl like the Olympic Stadium that had a tarp over it, it was dark.
It had AstroTurf that ruined careers, ruined Andre Dawson, you know, all these players.
Andre Dawson left. He would love to stay in Montreal, but he left because his knees couldn't handle the AstroTurf on concrete anymore. So there you go. I was part of the adage. I see what Josh is talking about. The whole adage, all or nothing. I don't want any of this half and half business. Sharing a few days here in Montreal and then back in Tampa Bay. Either we get our team or we don't. But Josh has a point. Even just a little tiny morsel of baseball is just
you've got to remind Montrealers of the beauty of baseball.
Exactly. Because 2004, the last time they're Major League Baseball, there's a lot of, well, I can't even say kids, you know, because anybody who was the age of five when the Montreal Expos left. Has no idea what it's like to go to a baseball game, professional league baseball game, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move it on. Finish things off in the news roundup. It's time for A View to a Kill. Our good friend Akil Badu, what's he been up to, Eric?
Badu, that voodoo that he does okay so far. He went, since our last recording, was 5-for-18 with 2 RBIs. Well, it's all right. But the funny story this week was that of Hunter Dozier of the Kansas City Royals did an amazing catch against Akil Badu that robbed him of a triple. So it was like scripted that when Hunter Dozier went up to bat next. It's quite the highlight reel. It was pretty much a Michael Jordan-esque leap that Akil Badu robbed Hunter Dozier of a definite dead cert home run. And pretty much towered over the center field fence and robbed it from him. And his defensive prowess was very much acknowledged this week.
Live by the glove and die by the glove.
There you go. Moving on.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to the second battle of the night, and it is New Balls, please. I'm not talking Wimbledon either. I'm talking the MLB decision to experiment with, or potential decision to experiment with, new pre-tagged baseballs in AAA. Now, we've already talked about a lot of the other innovations, and we'll come to those in a minute, boys, because I'd be interested in your view as to whether they've been successes or not. But this is not one that we've heard before. And yet I understand the pre-tacked baseballs, JC, they were utilized during the Olympics. And certainly a number of the US team came back absolutely raving about them. And this is basically baseball's way of getting around this whole sticky substance issue that they've tried to address and keep pitchers happy in the process. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, they use these type of baseballs in Japan as well. So they had that connection, not just in the Olympics, Japan, but also in the Nippon Professional Baseball League. So I'm supportive of that. I don't see a reason why necessarily to force pitchers to completely change. If people like the ball, it's a small tweak as far as I'm concerned. I still think you're going to find people cheating. You know, maybe they feel like, oh yeah, I feel the stickiness, but if I got just a little bit more stickiness, I think you're going to still have issues. But if it creates a better situation for the pitchers, great. I mean, the issue, though, is do you want to do that? Do you want to figure out ways to allow pitchers to get the advantages that make them better, even if it's what a lot of pitchers have been doing off the books, right, and sort of illegally by adding pine tar and other tacky substances? Or do you want to make it more difficult for pitchers because we've seen the advent of the strikeout era and all these other issues? So that would be the only reason I'd say no. I think for the game itself and for where players are at right now, it would be the right thing. If you want to try and create a new barrier for pitchers, then you ditch it.
When we talk about the sticky substance issue, you only have to look at the number of no-hitters. What do we have? I think we had 7 by June, which was just off the charts. Since they've clamped down on it, we had 1 in July, 1 in August. I mean, that's not coincidence, is it?
Yeah, I mean, but you still had 2, which is still quite a bit over a 2-month period. So, I think the issue of pitchers dominating batters is a legitimate one. So, again, if you see this as an opportunity to push pitchers to have to make modifications, then don't use the tacky ball, the pre-tack ball. If you want to continue baseball on a status quo level, it seems like a fair thing to do for pitchers who've developed their game needing that kind of extra ability to snap off pitches and get that spin rate.
Okay, well, let's just talk about some of the other innovations. And one really quite bizarre one, the idea of moving the pitcher's mound back. By quite a considerable distance, I think, you know, in terms of baseball. And yet it seems that the impact that's had has been relatively minor. They say where it's been trialed, run scoring is up by 0.22 of a run per game, slugging percentage up 26 points. So it had a small impact, but it seems almost so meaningless that is there any point?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't support this one because, again, I've talked about this. I feel the distances are somewhat sacrosanct in baseball. The 60 feet, 6 inches has been so ingrained into baseball. The 90 feet is so ingrained into baseball. I realize that the outfield dimensions do change by stadium, but those numbers are kind of there. And if it had have made a really demonstrable difference, maybe I would have thought twice. If this is what's going to turn baseball and make it a better game, maybe consider it then, but that's not the case. If it's nominal, if it's just on the edges, choose something else. So for me, I think that this test has been valuable to say, hey, this is not something we should do.
Okay, well, what about the defensive shift? I know you were very negative about this when it was being proposed. Has it been successful in terms of giving the hitter more of an advantage, or what's your thoughts as an experiment?
Yeah, I mean, I it doesn't matter to me because I feel like this one is just silly, because I feel like strategy, we talked about this before. I am supportive of anything that increases strategy, and players then or teams need to make the adjustment to that strategy. So yeah. If you want to put all your players between second and first base, go with God. That's your choice. The other team needs to figure out how to go the opposite way. And that's what bothers me with this, with the idea of trying to outlaw the positional shift, which is, as a person who played, I know you can keep inside the ball more, hit the ball the other way, don't be a dead pull hitter, change the way you swing the bat.
Yeah.
If people are making strategy changes, you then need to adjust. That's the beauty of sports. This is trying to take out an opportunity to make that kind of strategy adjustment towards this, right? Which is to approach the game differently. There was a dead ball era of baseball at the start of the 20th century. The approach there, the idea of the Baltimore chop, right? Hit the ball hard on the ground, use speed. It was a speed game. There wasn't a lot of power. Babe Ruth comes around, he changes that. Hitters change the way that they play. So we've seen this before, that players have the ability, and maybe for some of them that scares them, right? Because they've learned launch angle and this is all they can do, and they're not the type of hitters who are going to be contact first, who can hit to all fields. I like baseball with play, and maybe it's because it was the type of player I tried to be, which was a hit to all fields type of guy. If the ball was away, you hit it away. You didn't roll over and try and power it through, you know, the pull side. And so that's the answer. Your answer is not change, disallow teams from having great strategy. The answer is beat that strategy with play on the field.
I mean, MLB have to do something, JC. So what do you think they should be doing, and what could they be doing? And have any of these experiments been successful?
Right. I mean, the one that seems interesting to me is expanding the size of the bases. I think that that one is one that allows for more safety with the size of the base. It shortens the distance very slightly. Even though it's 90 feet, it ends up being a little less than 90 feet. So I'm a little itchy about that one, but at the same time, lead to more running, more efforts to steal. What has ruined the game, I'm sorry, Gouldy, is analytics, which is that teams don't care whether they strike out a million times as long as they hit the home runs, because they've done the number crunching, and the numbers tell them that that's okay for bottom line success. It does not lead to attractive baseball. You've seen this in football, right? Teams play in a way that's not attractive if they think it can win, and the fans hate it, but then they win, and then, you know, the fan base begrudgingly accepts it.
It's probably more relevant to rugby than it is football, actually, buddy. I mean, certainly in the last year, you know, the way South Africa have played, and they've won a Lions series, they've won a World Cup, but let's face it, most rugby fans in the world hate the way they play, probably going on to donor South African, and even some of them don't. So, I think it's a very valid point.
Well, and that's the pressure that needs to be made on teams, is that baseball, and this is sort of an American dynamic, which is winning trumps all. I mean, it's true in every country to a certain extent, but you never hear people saying this team doesn't play attractive baseball. I don't know whether it's people don't understand the game well enough, or they just don't care as long as their team's winning. But if there was more of a groundswell for, like, hey, I want to see guys who can run. I want to see guys who go oppo field, maybe they don't hit a home run, but they dump something in. And then, you know, the triple is the most exciting play in baseball, right? Yeah. You know, base hits are more exciting. Guys on base are more exciting than a solo shot. You know, guys on first and second trying to hit, you know, a gapper or hit a single, and then a play at the plate is more exciting. And we need, people who love baseball need to press for that type of attractive game. And that's the answer more than these changes, because if you make these changes, then you nod your head to continuing to play the style of baseball that is still strikeout heavy and home run reliant.
Okay, so do you see any of these changes being becoming a reality in MLB?
I think the bigger bases are probably the one that's most likely. I think the interesting one also are the automated umpires. I think that there's an issue with that, because what is the strike zone doesn't feel like the strike zone sometimes. I think that a lot of the automated umpires are calling high strikes that most hitters would avoid. And I think that that needs to be fixed. I think perhaps if you do go to the automated umpires, you shrink the strike zone a little bit. Obviously, that might speed up the game a little bit as well, too. You tighten the strike zone, force hitters to be a little more aggressive. That might be a bit of the answer, too.
Okay. Eric, I know just before we close this out that you're still feeling very strongly about the, well, it's not a novel change, but something that's been around for a while, and that's, of course, interleague baseball, particularly when you're playing interleague baseball at the latter stages of a regular season, where you think it absolutely has no place.
Exactly, because of all the innovations that Major League Baseball has introduced into our lovely sport, and those who know me knows I always rant on about how much I hate interleague. Never should the two leagues be together until they get to the postseason, or in the World Series, I should say. But this week, we've seen the Rays play the Marlins. We've seen the Mets play the Red Sox. We've seen the Orioles play the Phillies in interleague play. Now, of course, the results of those games affected the division, the wild card, and why should, you know, the Phillies, who are on a tear, by the way, as well, not out of it by any means, playing the lowly Orioles and another completely different league, why should that result count at this, you know, in the last 2 weeks of the
regular season? Worst team in baseball, buddy, the Orioles. The worst team in baseball by quite some margin. Same record as Arizona, but they're run.
So if you are going to play,
almost like 100 worse.
Yeah. So if you are going to play a bad team, play a bad team in your own division and or your own league that has that impacts the rest of the potential playoff picture, and that's why the Rays and Marlins. You know, congratulations Tampa Bay for clinching your division, but yeah, but great, well done. You did against the lowly Marlins. You know, so. So there you go.
I mean,
rant over, but actually it's not over by any means. But you know me, I'll be ranting about interleague till the cows come home.
Yeah, I mean, and that can work both ways. I mean, truly, schedule making is a really tricky calculus. I know that the people who've done it over the years, I've seen stories on it. It's very difficult to construct a 162-game schedule for as many teams we have. But Eric, you're right. I mean, I don't know how you can argue otherwise that you shouldn't be playing within your division down the home stretch where the games matter so much. And each win, you know, when the Yankees are playing the Red Sox, each win has such an impact and it makes it valuable. So yeah, I think you're on the right track.
Have a look at the NL East right now. What a tight race it is. I think the Braves, as of time of recording, that Sunday night, 1.5 games ahead of the Phillies, and we have a 3-game series at home to the Phillies. How exciting is that series going to be? That literally is going to be a do or die. And that's how they should be. 100%. That's how they should be. Okay, right. Great stuff, guys. Let's move it on. Time for... 7th inning stretch before the old bell came out. So, Eric, baseball book of the week. What have you got for us this week, buddy?
Baseball book of the week, which I'm going to tie in nicely with this because it's the 50th anniversary of Bob Uecker. Yes, Bob Uecker, the Milwaukee legend, baseball legend, a Miller beer commercial legend. And
a movie legend
as well. 50th anniversary of him broadcasting with the Milwaukee Brewers / any Milwaukee organization as well. He's been a stalwart with Milwaukee baseball for as long as anyone can remember. And the book I like to recommend, which I don't have here. Yes, it's in the rest of the junk in my parents' basement in Montreal, is a book which is hard to find. If you can find it anywhere on any online bookstore, is Catcher in the Rye. And when I say Catcher in the Rye, I mean W-R-Y. If anybody is allowed to make a play on words on the J.D. Salinger title of Catcher in the Rye, it should be Bob Uecker. So that's my baseball book of the week, if you can find it anywhere. Because it's out of print, it's out of circulation, but Catcher in the Rye by Bob Uecker, his autobiography, one hell of a funny book. And I can't recommend it enough. But
I just looked at the Amazon report on it. A good chuckle, if not an outright laugh.
Yes.
Every paragraph.
And how much is one for? Like 50 bucks.
He is innately funny. And if anyone's seen, I'm sure everyone, most of the people who are listening to this have seen the movie Major League. He improvised a lot of those lines, just a bit outside and all those great lines in that film that were a key reason why that's one of the great baseball movies.
Exactly. Can't agree more, buddy. Can't agree more. Okay, what's our cultural reference this week, Eric?
The cultural reference, okay, now bear with me here, because I'm going to add on another baseball book here, which will tie into movies. Because one thing you can find online is the Gray's Sports Almanac. Now, for those of you who are familiar with Back to the Future, or actually, I'll take that back. Those who are familiar with Back to the Future 2, where Biff gets it, the Gray Sports Almanac from 1950 to 2000, where he goes back in time and then steals a DeLorean and bets on everything, baseball and horse racing, everything, and builds his billionaire empire thanks to the stealing the Gray's Sports Almanac. Now, there's that famous scene where Michael J. Fox, that famous scene where he goes forward in time and he sees the Cubbies finally winning the World Series in 2015 against a fictional team called the Miami Gators. Now, when they filmed that, Florida didn't have a team yet. So it was like sort of a prophecy of like, wow, Miami's going to have a team. And it came pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Remember, like, yes, the Cubbies won in 2016, but they were in the playoffs 2015. And if anyone remembers, everyone was thinking on their lips, well, wow, could Back to the Future be right? Could this be the year that the Cubs finally break the curse in 2015, as mentioned in Back to the Future 2? Well, it didn't. They had to wait a whole year for that. But that's, you know, that's it. And I can't believe it's already been 6 years since that reference in Back to the Future. And here we are. But going back to this sports almanac that you can buy on eBay, Amazon, other reputable, this is basically is a prop slash gift. If anybody who loves Back to the Future 2 or anything to Back to the Future, you can buy this. Now, the problem with this, which I've actually put a scathing review on this, inside they do have notes and about, you know, years, every year's going back from 1950 to 2000. But it's completely inaccurate. It's wrong. It's like you look at like the standings of, for example, 1980, and it's the standings are completely wrong. They're irrelevant. I figure if you're going to do a gift for Back to the Future of the Gray Sports Almanac as a film prop, at least put the information in there that's correct.
Maybe Eric, in our timeline, it's wrong. But in another timeline, it's exactly correct.
Yeah, you know, good, I didn't point. Think of which timeline are we in? Where's
exactly.
David?
Maybe, oh, he's my missing. God. I need a waffle quick.
Absolutely.
But there you go. That's for those of you who remember that famous scene in Back. So that's my reference of the
week. I have to say, boys, that was always my dream. I always thought that how good would that be to have a sports almanac that told you all the winners in every sporting event, every horse racing event. I mean, that would just be the ultimate.
Honestly, so. Goldie, that speaks vibes to you. Like, your dream is self-enrichment through gambling, as opposed to like being able to save the world, you know, solve climate change, whatever. I want to win the sports.
I could do all that once I had the money. So yeah, it's all part of
it. I'm sure that's how you would have spent it.
So Eric, put us out of our misery. Have you got any music this week? If you say no,
no music this week. I figured I'll save there's lots of music out there, and I'll save it for next.
You do the swan song next week for the end of the season.
Fantastic. That's true. Yeah. Okay, thank you, boys. Right, let's move it on. We're nearing the end. We got the mailbag. I've got a couple of very quick questions.
Hold on.
I got a couple of trivia.
You got some trivia? Oh, yeah. I apologize. Okay. Yeah, well, you know, I'm 0 for 30 this season, so I didn't really want to do it, but go on.
I love the fact that you're 0 for 30. We only had 26 episodes.
We've had multiple questions, at least one episode. The one you stuck on.
That's true.
And you got one of those right, so you're 1 for 30.
Yeah. You know, genuinely, I think I've only got one right the whole season. It's pretty damn depressing. A monkey would have done better, just guessing. Okay, so quick reminder, you said, who's the oldest player ever?
Who's the oldest player to get an RBI in Major League Baseball, in an RBI in a official Major League Baseball game? And I gave the options of Bartolo Colon, Jamie Moyer, or Tommy John. Yes, Tommy John. Now,
okay, well, I know that. Can I go first? Just the only reason I'm saying this is that I know that Bartolo Colon played to a very old age, and I know that he hit RBIs that he was actually quite good with the bat. So I'm going with Bartolo for that reason and that reason only.
Well, all three of those players played to a really late age. I mean, Tommy John's career was completely extended by his ulnar collateral ligament surgery replacement, which is named after him. But I actually think the player who played the longest of the three of those guys is actually Jamie Moyer, who I think played almost to 50. So I'm going to go with Jamie Moyer, National League player at the end of his career with the Phils. I'm going with Moyer.
Okay, well, this is not one of those things where I can go in no particular order. The answer, actually, I'll just tell you, is not Bartolo Colon. It's actually Jamie Moyer.
Hey! Oh, what a surprise.
At the age of 49.
Yeah, I knew he was almost 50. Okay.
One for 27.
49, Jamie Moyer got an RBI, making him the oldest player. And it had to be a pitcher, didn't it? Because pitchers somehow have more longevity than position players for some bizarre reason. There you go.
But that is fascinating. I still think that's still surprising to me on some level. I don't know why. But
guys, good question. question. Whenever we talk about a hitter having a disastrous season, you know, he's hitting below the Mendoza line. Have we got a new line that we can create that's sort of symbolic of just how useless my in-game trivia performance has been?
The Goldie line.
The Goldie line. The Goldie line. I'm liking that. I'm liking that. Okay, can I move on now? Like yes, I tried
please.
To a moment.
Please do.
Here we go. Okay. Right, we're nearing the end. We've got the mailbag. I've got a couple of quick questions for you. Mike Dowling, the UK's number one Giants fan. Will the Giants win the NL West? And are they a realistic prospect for the World Series?
You I feel like we've discussed this. I never want to say anything that would disappoint Mike Dowling, one of the nicest human beings that the three of us have met on this planet. You know where I stand on this, and I hope I'm wrong. He will IM me. He will instant message me to tell me I'm wrong, and I will enjoy that moment, but I don't see it happening.
Well, okay, me, so I no just, and no. Is that what you're
well,
saying?
No, for me, I gotta say at least, you know, half my Bay Area World Series will be intact, so I'll say yes.
Okay, so you're going yes and yes, because there were two questions there. I don't know if you noticed whether we're going to win the NL West and the World Series.
Yeah, I was knowing.
If I say Bay Area World Series, that means yes and yes.
No, okay, it doesn't, because they could get the wild card. They could get the wild card and then still.
Oh, yeah,
So basically, you're no. Eric's yes and yes, and I'm yes and no. I'm going yes to win the NL West, but I don't think they'll win the World Series.
So, anyway, you know what will happen? Because the only way that we get this all wrong is they win the wild card, so they lose the NL West and win the World Series. And then we're all wrong.
And then we're all wrong.
Which would be appropriate.
Well, maybe Dave could go with that option in his absence. See that we are the Johnny and Josh Show, and we're on Facebook. We're also on Twitter at Johnny and Josh. And we'd love you to subscribe and like if you haven't already done so. And if you have, then make sure you tell your family, your friends, and big us up big time on all the social medias. In addition to the Johnny and Josh Show, of course, we've also got a few other podcasts out there. I'm doing a fantasy baseball podcast called Behind Home Plate on Twitter. That's at BHP Pod with the fantasy baseball legend that is Mr. James Holden. We'd love to have your company on that. That comes out once a week, midweek. And of course, part of the stable, the Nat Coombs Show, and that's at the NC Show on Twitter. So do check that one out as well. All part of the Ted Fred stable. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, on YouTube. You can see the buttons at the bottom of the screen. So get pressing and be a part of the family. Well, that's it for us from episode 26 of the Johnny and Josh Show. What you got to look forward to this week, boys? Anything exciting?
I leave on Wednesday to go to Cleveland, Ohio to play in the second leg of the pre-trial qualifiers for Olympics. A long, long shot, but I like our opening game. So I think it's anything can happen. Sport, right? Right, Goldie?
Josh might be the Winter Olympics, everyone. You never know.
I would not put a single pence on that one.
Well, now he's in a pre-trials of the qualifier for the qualifier. So,
yeah. No, just the pre-trials for the qualifier. There's no second qualifier after this there, buddy. I know you're trying to make fun.
No, I want to see you in Beijing in 2022. Thank you very much.
If I make it to Omaha for the trials, that would be beyond. If you want to, we're talking way too much about this, but I want to win a handful of games here and set us up for a chance to go to Nationals next year, which we'd have to qualify for. So,
I am busy this week, by the way. Thank you very much. I just finished doing I'm doing the London Marathon next week, by the way.
You're running it. Congratulations.
I'm doing the London Marathon. Yeah.
Well, filming it or
for
running BBC, it?
Yeah. For, But
would it be hilarious if Eric's by the side with a camera with a hot dog in his other hand as people are, you know, killing themselves to finish the marathon?
Guys, thank you very much. Thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for joining us on the Johnny and Josh Show. We look forward to having you company same time next week. Till then, stay well.